this class is, this was a tough lesson for me personally. This was like, no one chose this lesson to teach, and I'm like, I can understand why, because I'm like, you talk about someone that does not feel adequate to teach this lesson. It certainly is me. I've certainly learned a lot as I have studied for this lesson, and I feel like I'm hoping that as we study today, we don't walk away feeling worse. I want us to walk away feeling like, you know, we are on track here, and I think that's the important thing. You know, but I think in this lesson, just the title of it, I get a guilt feeling all right away. So, but I have to say, you know, as I studied and I really searched and, you know, I feel like, you know, I'm on track. I'm not perfect, and I certainly have learned from this lesson. But I'm hoping everyone walks away with the same message. You know, we are on track. We do have a good guide to help us stay on track. And that's what this lesson is about. So we are talking about Titus 2, and we're talking about working at home. So Titus 2, 3 through 5, just to remind everyone of that passage, that aged women likewise be reverent in behavior, not slanderers or slaves to much wine. They are to teach what is good, and so train the young women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind, and submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be reviled. So today we're taking the piece of working at home. And very quickly, what came to mind for me was our wonderful example of working at home in Proverbs 31. And so we're going to spend quite a bit of time today looking at the what I'm calling the ideal homemaker that we find in Proverbs 31.
I already feel guilty.
Now remember, that's not the intent here. So going back to the definition of working at home, when I went to Strong's, the word working is talking about caring for the house, working at home, the watch or keeper of the house, keeping at home, and taking care of household affairs. So that's what we're talking about today, is we're focusing on our home and everything that entails around what we as women should be doing as we're taking care of our home. So Proverbs 31 it can be called the virtuous woman. I've heard it called the example of an ideal homemaker. The wife, the noble wife, is another example of what I've been called. And I think the first thing that I want everyone to take away is this is not a young woman. This is a woman that is seasoned and has lived many years. So first off, don't start comparing yourself to the Proverbs 31 woman, because I feel like she's probably even older than I am. I mean, she is a woman that has a lot of experience. What?
By 105.
At least. So.
And we always remember she had a staff.
And we're going to talk about that today. Absolutely.
Staff.
Absolutely.
And my staff quit.
Yeah. But it's, you know, but what Proverbs 31 to us is that ultimate goal. You know, we should look at it as that ultimate example, that ultimate goal of what we should be striving to do in our home. And if you notice, it's very general. It's not specifically telling us, thou shalt, thou shalt. It gives us this general painting. I almost see it as a painting of what this woman looks like. And then we take that guide and we apply it to our lives. And this is an important passage, and you can see correlations when it looks to looking at the importance of it. If you will turn to 1 Timothy 2, 9, and 10. And then while someone's turning there, if someone else will turn to 1 Peter 3, 1 through 6. I'd like for us to both read those passages. And when someone has 1 Timothy, if you wouldn't mind reading, that would be great.
Likewise, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modesty and discreetly, not with braided hair and gold or frills or costly garments, but rather by means of good works, as befits women making a claim to godliness.
Very good. And then does someone have 1 Peter 3? Okay.
If you are a wife, you must put your husband first. Even if he opposes our message, you will win him over by what you do. No one else will have anything to say to him, because he will see how you honor God and live a pure life. Don't depend on things like fancy hairdos or gold jewelry or expensive clothes to make you look beautiful. Be beautiful in your heart by being gentle and quiet. This kind of beauty will last, and God considers it very special. Long ago, those women who worshipped God and put their hope in Him made themselves beautiful by putting their husbands first. For example, Sarah obeyed Abraham and called him her master. You are her true children if you do right and don't let anything frighten you.
Perfect. So what we're going to see is a similarity in those two passages as we turn to Proverbs 31. So the duties prescribed for us as women in our home are very, very similar. And it's like a painting. When I was reading some of the concordances, Proverbs 31, it follows the Hebrew alphabet. Each verse is one letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And some call it like a poem. And the Jewish family, this would be a poem that they would recite. This is, once again, just creating this painting of this ideal homemaker that can be carried down for generations. So, if that being said, if we'll turn to Proverbs 31, and if someone would please just go ahead and read 10 through the end of the chapter, I think having one person read it would make it flow nicely.
Who can find a virtuous woman, for her price is far above rubies? The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. She seeketh wool and flax, and worketh willingly with her hands. She is like the merchant's ships. She bringeth her food from afar. She riseth also while it is yet night, and giveth meat to her household, and a portion to her maidens. She considereth a field, and buyeth it, and the fruit of her hands she planteth a vineyard. She girdeth her loins with strength, and strengtheneth her arms. She perceiveth that her merchandise is good, candle goeth not out by night. She layeth her hands to the spindle, and her hands hold the distaff. She stretcheth out her hand to the poor, yea, she reacheth forth her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household are clothed in scarlet. She maketh herself coverings of tapestry, her clothing is silk and purple. Her husband is known in the gates, when he sitteth among the elders of the land. She maketh fine linen and selleth it, and delivereth girls unto the merchant. Strength and honor are her clothing, and she shall rejoice in time to come. She openeth her mouth with wisdom, and in her tongue is the law of kindness. She looketh well to the ways of her household, and eateth not the bread of idleness. Her children arise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done virtuously, but thou excellest them all. Favor is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a woman that feareth the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates.
I love this passage. I mean, just reading it, it's just a beautiful passage. It flows, and the picture that it paints of a woman that we should strive to be is just, to me, it's one of my favorite passages in the Bible. And when I feel insecure, when I feel that I'm struggling in being that homemaker and that wife and that mother that I should be, this actually passage is very reassuring to me, because this is a very busy woman. And she can do it all. We are strong women. We can do so much. And this is such an example of what we are able to do and the many different talents. So it's one of my favorites. This Proverbs 31 is, the description of this woman is broken into three different categories. The first two verses, it's a very general picture of what this worthy woman is like. She's virtuous, she's invaluable, she's unspotted, and she will do her husband good. And it just paints this very, in those first two verses, this is what this virtuous woman looks like. Then in the next verses 13 through 29, it gets into some specifics. So how does she do that? This is how she does it. And she starts listing out the examples of what she does. And then it sums up in 30 and 31 and talks about how she has favor with the Lord and how important it is with the Lord that she lived this type of life and that we all live this type of life. So as we break this down, think about it in that way. So first off, and this is one of the reasons why you know, I feel confident. This is an older woman. She really has achieved perspective in her life. She has a balanced life. She's a very busy woman, but she doesn't have her priorities all messed up. She's not a slave to the mental tasks, the daily tasks that need to be done, and forget about the important thing, which is the family. She's got a lot of tasks that's going, whether it's, you know, maidservants that she's directing or different tasks that she's doing. She has that on her plate, but it's not to the sacrifice of the family. And that's one of the things that that makes me feel good. That, because I've always, and I didn't work my entire entire career. When our kids were little, I did stay at home. However, I've never, and I always have said, I am not an ideal stay at home mom. And so going back, when the choice was for me to go back to work, you know, I understood that I was going back to work, and part of it was for me, but I also felt like it was important for the family. However, I also understood that put greater responsibility and burden on me. I can't just start making an excuse, I work now, so it doesn't get done. You know, just we have to make sure that we are completing those daily tasks. It may be hire a housekeeper, but you make sure those daily tasks are done. And then so you can make sure that you are also addressing the needs of the family as a whole. She's not so engaged in educational and social pursuits that she neglects the physical needs of the family. I've seen stay-at-home moms that are so busy out other places doing other things, they completely neglect their homes and their family. I mean, so, you know, just because you're a stay-at-home mom doesn't mean that you can cross that off your list. I passed that test. That's not it at all. Your focus needs to be your family. And I cannot, for me, that is the most important thing to stress here. When we have young children at home, when our children need us, our job is to be in our homes. And, you know, there are times that we can go out, we can support, we can help, but I've always been felt very passionate about this. Our primary focus is to be in the home taking care of our family when they are at that stage. Another stage in your life will come, and they won't be in your home. And then you need to be out helping others.
Reminds me of Theresa May. I know some of you know her. She said, you can have it all, just not at the same time.
Exactly.
I always said that. I think about that all the time.
But that is very, very true. And I will tell you, this was a challenge I had. I mean, I would go head-to-head with some women in the congregation about this because they would see me not out in the social world doing the things that they felt like I should be doing because my focus was focus on my family. But to that point, though, today it's quite the opposite for me. My children are raised, so my focus should be on others. My focus should be on what can I do to help support and encourage others. And you can't do it all at the same time. I really genuinely believe that. So,
now she's wise, too.
So. Oh, okay. So get off my soapbox.
No.
Yeah, but I mean, this was actually, I mean, this is one of those times, and I remember it was in our Florida days. So our kids were very young at that time, and there was another mother and wife in a congregation, but she was young. And going back to a comment that was made, I think, last Sunday, don't be getting your advice from your peers because they're in the same boat you are. And she was one of my peers, but it upset me tremendously because I was not living up to what she thought I should be when, you know, but I thought my priorities were different. And so what we see with this woman is that she's got balanced planning and she sees to the family's entire needs. And so I walk away from this with, you know, making me feel good because this is a very busy woman. She's obviously a career woman, but she also has, you know, this strong commitment to her family, supporting her husband where the needs are there, and she can do it all. And we can too. I really feel that we can. Yes.
My husband talks about those of us who may have a strong constitution versus a weak constitution. And I'm always told by my husband, I think more like a man than I do a woman. So I have a strong constitution. I can handle a lot. When you look at someone like my sister, whom none of you know, She can't. She has a weak constitution, so we can't. We have to recognize our character flaws or weaknesses and not try to think, well, I can do it anyways, because you might really...
That's a good point.
You might really mess things up.
Well, and if you feel like, and if you, and I'm just putting in quotations, mess things up, what that ends up doing to that person is just making them feel more like they're a failure.
Exactly.
It's a cycle, then.
We all have our limits. We all have our talents. When we talk about the keeper of the home, I'm at home and have been for years. I know my home inside and out. John doesn't like it that I can point out, well, this is leaky now, and that has a hole, and then this happened here. But you know what? Because he's at work, if I wasn't there with those minute things, our home would just collapse around us.
And people
may think, oh, that is so mundane. But it's important because this is our home. We want heat in the winter. We want cool air in the summer. Well, if that's my job, I mean, this is one of the minor things, but my place, everybody's family's different.
Exactly.
And you're right, though. We all have different, we're stronger in some areas than others. You know, others will, you know, the women in my neighborhood hated me for years because I cut my grass. Because their husbands would go home and say, I said, you know what? Maybe you like doing such and such inside your house, and I can't stand it. So we balance it in my home.
And I think the point is we should not be judgmental to each
Absolutely.
Other.
Absolutely.
In any way, because how we manage our home, as long as it works for our family, that's what's important. And whether it's, I notice there's a leak and tell my husband and he calls the plumber, or if I call the plumber, or if I fix it myself or my husband, every family is different. And we should not look on any of our families from the outside and start judging the things that they're doing wrong. I mean, it's just so incredibly important. And to your point, I mean, obviously that experience I had in Florida scarred me. I mean, I felt very, and I still, like, would question, you know, am I doing this right? Am I not? And, you know, you do, because you want to do your very best. We all want, we're striving so hard to do what is right, what God wants us to do in raising our children and having this home, a Proverbs 31 home, that, you know, if we start being judgmental of each other instead of supporting each other, it's only going to make it worse. It's not good stuff. So your point is wonderful. I appreciate it.
This woman, we don't know how old she was, but we just assumed that she was up there in a number of years. She didn't start out this way.
Absolutely not.
She didn't start out buying a field today and all that. I mean, I can't imagine. I think about that one. I can't imagine. Because John and I, the big things, we don't do anything without, joint decision. I could not go out and buy a field. John, I bought a field today.
Yeah, and I wouldn't either.
Terry? Exactly. I have no idea, but I bought a field. But you see what I'm saying is...
I'm starting a farm.
So what we have to remember, she didn't start out this year.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And she made some errors probably along the way.
And that's what... So let's talk a little bit about, you know, what did she do? How did she manage? What did she do in her home to make her this ideal homemaker? So first off, in Proverbs 31:15, it talks about she makes the necessary plans for the day. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her husband and portions for her maidens. And so the word talking about the portions for her maidens, that the transliteration is chalk. Basically what it is she's assigning tasks for the day. So she is getting up in the morning and she is planning her day. That's what she's doing. And that's something that we all need to learn to do. And we all should do in whatever our home picture looks like. We do need to plan our day, because if we don't plan our day, we may end up falling into idleness or laziness. And so starting off by planning our day, however we plan it, whether it's in our mind, I know I've got to get these things accomplished today. Many people like task lists that they can mark things off with, whatever that looks like. But it's something that she did and that we need to learn to do as well. We do know that it is our responsibility to manage the household. And this is talked about as well in 1 Timothy 5:14. So I would have younger widows marry, bear children, manage their households, and give the adversary no occasion for slander. You'll see this verse on more than one occasion this morning, but what it's talking about is it is our duty to manage the household, just like it was for this woman in Proverbs 31. She also ensured, and we find this in 31:15, she ensured proper food and nutrition to ensure a well-fed family. You know, now her picture looks very different than ours today. I mean, she had to go out and find the food, wherever it was coming from. We get ours at a grocery store or a garden or wherever it is. But the bottom line is, in general, we need to feed our family. We need to make sure that they're well fed. And I thought it was interesting because some of the books I was reading would talk about this is not just making sure they're full. This is making sure they're well fed. They're nutritious meals, that we're actually feeding them things that will keep them healthy and allow them to grow. So it's focusing on the nutrition of the family. And, you know, this can be done in many different ways in a home, you know, by making sure that you're cooking the things the kids will eat, or making sure you're not having a lot of junk foods in the house, that they'll get full on that and not eat their vegetables. Planning meals is something people love to do. Coupon shopping, whatever you need to do in your home, whatever that is for you, all we know is we're supposed to just make sure our family is well fed, nutrition is well fed. And using our resources efficiently. I mean, I coupon shopped major time, you know, when our kids were young and when I was at home and Ron wasn't working and, you know, did do the meal planning and did think through everything because, you know, the dollars counted for us at that time. She also ensured her family was well clothed. Proverbs 31:13, 19, and 22. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She puts her hands to the distaff and her hands hold the spindle. Her clothing is fine and linen and purple. This does not mean our kids, we have to go out and give our kids the label stuff, the best stuff. That's not what this means. But what it does mean is that we do appropriately address our children for the seasons that they're in. I think it means that we do need to take care of their clothes they're wearing. I mean, if they're stained, we need to wash them. If they're wrinkled, they need to be pressed or put in the dryer to get the wrinkles out. Or, I mean, we need to ensure that.
Today.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Do they have to be pressed?
No, I said dryer.
Well,
no.
I'm just season appropriate thing. I mean,
Well, we're mixed. We're in between seasons right now. But you know, this is. But I will tell you that is. But I think that is important. I mean, I have seen, and this is something I'm sure we've all seen. Babies taken out, nothing on their arms, or it's freezing cold, and I'm just like, oh my word. But I mean, and you know. I'm not here to judge, but I just think that we need to stop and think. We need to make sure our children are appropriately dressed for the season. You know, especially if they're in school and if they're going outside. We need to make sure they have their coats. They make sure, you know, now whether they put them on at school, we don't know, but at least we start them off the day with them. I think is something important. And we're setting an example with our children when they're young. And if we have a very lackadaisical attitude with how they look or dress, or if they don't see us taking care of their clothes, then what are they going to learn? And, you know, as they get older, there is going to become a point in time where they need to dress respectfully and presentable. And will they even know how to do that? And, you know, so this, to me, is an important part of, you know, with our children and our families. And you guys can talk to me afterwards, but
I try not to. I guess I made my daughter feel a little bit guilty yesterday because she was talking about my 13-year-old that went camping, and she wasn't sure what he had, and I said, you didn't help him pack? She says, when do I have time? He's 13, he's old enough to pack. But she was worried he hadn't taken certain stuff to stay warm, and I'm thinking, I would have checked it, but she said she didn't have time. And then she said, he doesn't even have his deodorant. I said, oh, he's camping, they probably don't have any water either.
I'd be more worried about the sweatshirt than the deodorant, but I mean, but that is a concern, so.
Well, I'm in the middle of it, so anyway.
and everybody can tell that by looking at my children. But I was going to say, it is they're at their age where they're just that appropriateness, you know, that children learn about what's and explaining that to them. And it's not as easy as it sounds.
You're right.
Know.
You're absolutely right.
But they do, they can learn it, or, you know, that's the goal.
And, you know, and I think it is appropriateness for what they're doing. You know, like, and, you know, kids go through the age where they want to dress themselves. And I think if you're staying at home all day long and if you want to wear the wackiest looking thing on earth, that's fine. Now, if you're going out for the day in public, you know, if it's not appropriate, then I think it's our responsibility to teach them. We need to do some tweaking here because this will work for home, but this doesn't work for where we're going. And it's that kind of lessons that, you know, we need to do. Yes.
I do that with my sons and my husband.
Well, yeah.
My husband usually asks me, does this go? Is this, like, we actually went to the Bible study last night. He goes, do you think jeans and a nice shirt would be okay? And do I need to wear that? I mean, he's still asking what's appropriate.
Absolutely.
But I ask him, too. It's like, okay, this is what I'm planning on wearing. Is this appropriate? Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, we bounce it off each other.
Right. Terry?
I was just going to say, just this morning, Tara has on just this little outfit today that it's some gauchos that I bought, you know, because they're on sale and a little shirt. And she said this morning, she said, I just don't know if I have to wear this today. And I caught her and I looked at her and I said, there are kids who are naked and some who are in pants. I don't want to ever hear you say that again. Get over it. Mm-hmm. And you know, one day that'll click with her.
Mm-hmm. It will.
One day in the future. And as far as Kaylee, with what Jennifer said, it gets harder as they get older for appropriateness. There was a time, and some of the church would probably disagree with me, there was a time, and I drew the line at certain places, but Kaylee had a little more fluctuation than some kids. And guess what? In those fluctuations, they're buried on her part, not mine, on the bottom drawer right now. Eventually will be thrown away some things that she was wearing that she had to kind of work through that period. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean things were hanging out.
Right.
Because, I mean, I would say things like, well, your booty gratuities, I'm sorry, that's too close. I'm sorry, a little bit longer. But she worked through it, too, mm-hmm. and she heard me talking constantly about it. And now I noticed they're at my house buried under stuff. You see, she's now starting, she's kind of, it's beginning to click, and she'll see things at school, and she'll look around. And so that's the, you've got to work within your family and your kids. And I'm not saying, I mean, they're, I drew the line. I mean, it was a clear line. Absolutely forget it. No, no, no. Sometimes you have to tweak things. You have to be there. You have to be attentive always and let the kids as they get older. Because I really believe if you, at least I know my kids, they're going to one day be out of your household. Mm-hmm. Well, I couldn't do that then, but I can do it now because someone's not looking. But see, she'll remember when someone is looking.
And I agree with that. As we raised our kids, we gave them enough latitude that they could work through it themselves, watching them very, very carefully.
Right.
With the same principle, if we make it so strict on them now, what are they going to do when they leave? And that was our concern of ours.
Right.
And, you know, there are different philosophies with children, but that was really kind of the way we approached it, too.
And you have to know your child, because some kids are very submissive and passive and easy, and they're not
absolutely.
But if yours isn't, you have to balance that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. These are great comments. So she applies herself. I think that we could see this throughout all of the verses in Proverbs 31. She works diligently. Proverbs 31, 17 through 18, she dresses herself with strength and makes her arm strong. She perceived that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. She worked a lot of hours. You know, she was up early in the morning, and she was the last one at bed at night with a candle burning. And look, think of all of us. Is that not us? Completely. Is that not us? She's not definitely not idle or lazy. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. And this is where we get into, once again, going back to 1 Timothy 5:14. This is one of the reasons why it was important for younger women to go ahead and remarry, bear children, manage their households, and give the adversary no occasion for slander. Because going back to even planning your day, if you don't have a plan, what the risk is, you're going to become idle or you're going to become lazy. And that can become a cycle very easily, and it's not a good thing, and it's not condoned. It doesn't mean that you can't have a day or a Saturday where you just completely veg out because you need it. I mean, we all need that. That's not what this is talking about. But it's talking about as you go about your daily schedule and your daily routine of life. And she's not a gossiper. And once again, when you are a diligent worker, it's very difficult to be idle or lazy. And it's very difficult to be a gossiper because you're very focused on the tasks at hand, the duties at hand, and what you're doing. And, you know, similar with our children. You keep them busy, they're not going to be able to find ways to get into trouble because they're busy. So I think that that applies there as well. Thoughts, comments? She also supports the economic needs of the family. And I think this is a very important area for us. She has the interest and supports the economic well-being of the family, whether it is by going out and buying a land to do a garden, whether it is making clothes that she can sell. But she's doing what she needs to do for the family. She does not spend money when her husband says, can't spend money. And, you know, in each of our homes, there has to be some guide of when can I spend and when can I not spend. And following that guide is extremely important. And going back to what Terry had said earlier, in our marriage as well, we never have made major decisions and purchases. It was always a joint decision. And it was just a rule in our house. It is to this day. I mean, we would not, neither one of us go out and spend a large amount of money without having discussed and consulted and made the decision together. But, you know, I've heard of situations where, I mean, women, a husband will constantly be saying, we can't afford it, we can't afford it. And it's like, it's deaf ears. And they'll go out and they'll spend. And the family gets into some financial problems because of that situation. And so that is something that we do need to be aware of. And we need to make sure that we're supporting the economic well-being of our family. And when necessary, we need to contribute to the family income. And there are many times and in many situations today, as well as in the past, that the woman needs to work. And, you know, I think it's serious to decide why do you need to work, you know. Is it a situation where the woman needs to work to just for the fun stuff? Well, if the fun stuff is what helps keep the family whole, then maybe the fun stuff is important to do. Or maybe it's a situation where the woman is working because the husband's income just doesn't pay all the bills, doesn't meet whatever the budget allows. In that situation, she needs to help support the income as well. I think back, my mom stayed at home with us when we were little, but they wanted to buy a house. And to buy a house, she had to go to work so they could get the money for the down payment. And they made an agreement that I'm going to go to work and I'm going to work for this many years. We're going to get our down payment together and then we're going to buy a house. And then she actually stopped working. But she knew that she needed to contribute. If for us to get to that next level, she needed to contribute to the family income for our family to get there. She's also generous in her giving, and actually, strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come. And we can talk about that verse, but also in verse 20, as we were reading Proverbs 31, this one I think applies even better to that, where it says, she opens her hands to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. So not only is she, you know, taking care of her family, but she certainly has her eyes open to how she can help give to others and support others as well. And when you look at Proverbs 31:20-25, you know, that passage is talking about the fact that, you know, the clothing that she's making, she has the comfort and satisfaction of knowing that she's putting her best into it. She's making something that is perfected in her eyes. And that she will reflect upon this with comfort when she comes to be old. She's not idle. She doesn't waste her time. And ultimately, she knows putting all of this together, she will rejoice in eternity. That strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come because she knows that her where her ultimate reward is. Thoughts? Comments? So the next section of this is the fact that, so not only is she doing all that at home, but she's also supporting her husband in her husband's endeavors. And she's fulfilling his obligations. And, you know, we've all heard the saying, behind every successful man is a good wife. That is absolutely the truth.
Amen.
It is absolutely the truth. And they wouldn't deny it. And their success is our success. And the support that we, when we are able to manage that home, when we are able to give them the confidence that we can make some of the decisions that need to be made, and allows them to go off and focus on their jobs to bring in the income to the family, to support the family, it's a wonderful thing. Obligations to the Lord, though. This also, when we do our duty, we are allowing them to fulfill their obligations to the Lord. And when you think about it, and this is something I had not stopped to think about, but there are some areas of Christian service that a man could not do without us. And you think about being an elder, being a deacon. We have to be there for them to be successful at doing that or even becoming that. And 1 Timothy 3:2 and 11:12. Let's go take a look at those really quick just to talk about the importance. So if someone wants to turn there, that would be great. 3, chapter 3, verse 2, and then 11 through 12. So, verse 2.
That's why officials, sorry, this is like contemporary version, must have a good reputation and be faithful in marriage. They must be self-controlled, sensible, well-behaved, friendly to strangers, and able to teach.
And then 11 through 12.
Women must also be serious. They must not gossip or be heavy drinkers, and they must be faithful in everything they do. Church officers must be faithful in marriage. They must be in full control of their children and everyone else in their home.
Very good. So that shows you that they're relying on us to be able to fulfill that duty of them as they're an elder and a deacon. Advising and encouraging. This is also something that, you know, they rely upon us for. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. And then going back to 1 Timothy, where it talks about being sober-minded and being respectful. I think we're going to get there in a second. But they need us to help be a sounding board for them at times. When they are being challenged, you know, we are their person to help keep them in perspective, to keep them in self-control, allow them to give them advice if they are needing advice. You know, they certainly are seeking the scriptures, but there are times that they'll come to us and think about it. What should I do? Or they can get very upset about something, and our role is to help calm them down. Our role is to help get them to see it in a different way, or help them to understand it in a different way. And that is something that is important for us to do. Hospitality. This is another important role that is very difficult for a man to do without a wife. I mean, they certainly can be hospitable, but this is a duty that we have. In 1 Timothy 3:2, therefore an overseer must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, sober-minded, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, and able to teach. And, you know, I have to believe this is one of the reasons why it is important that there is a wife behind an elder, because hospitality is such an important role in that. And, you know, what that means for us is that we need to be open and ready to welcome guests, whether it's into our home or out to a restaurant. And it's not, oh, my goodness, what does the house look like? Oh, my goodness, what am I going to feed? You know, those things are important, but it is not as important as just being open and hospitable and gracious and say, come on over, the house is a mess, let's order takeout. You know, giving that feeling that people are welcome and loved is what is really, to me, what is behind hospitality. And a lot of times we get hung up on quite the opposite, the Martha side of things, where, and that is, you know, we've got to get, everything has got to look just perfect, or, you know, I can't have them over because I don't have time to cook the meal. You know, those are, that's not what this is about. This is about finding opportunities that you can come together and learn more about each other and support each other. Romans 12:13, contribute to the needs of the saint and seek to show hospitality. 1 Peter 4:9, I don't think this is something that is, you know, rocket science to any of us. But what it is, I think the important part of this is that we shouldn't make excuses. This is something that we need to work on doing. And that's all of us at any given time. Because we cannot be strong as a family, a Christian family, if we are not having each other in our homes or somehow getting together and getting to know each other better. And when preachers come in or there are strangers that are emailing and saying, you know, I'm going to be in town, I need a place to stay. You know, it is our responsibility to open our homes and be hospitable. And this going back to talking about the mainstay through trying situations, 1 Timothy 3:2, when it talks about being sober-minded, self-controlled, and respectable, you know, it is the wife sometimes that is that mainstay, and it is that person that is helping to get the husband through some very trying situations. So, you know, being that anchor for our husbands is an important part for them to be able to fulfill their obligations to the Lord. And then able to manage the household properly. And as an elder, you know, he has to be able to manage it. Who do you think's doing it? Hello? But I mean, but that we're doing it because it, then it allows him to be successful in his job as well. Yes?
And maybe, and I just thought of this, you know, when it talks about a deacon and an elder and the qualifications, it says in there a man, one wife, or, okay, it didn't leave that part out.
No.
Because she's absolutely necessary.
Absolutely.
To carry out those responsibilities and those duties.
Absolutely.
So.
Yes, absolutely. And so, and this is our duty. I mean, this is our duty. So it's, but he is the head of our home. So, and then the last thing really quick, you know, she is the spiritual keeper at home. She is focused on the spirituality of the family. And the last two verses, as it talks about, she's pleasing in for the Lord. Proverbs 31:30, charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. So she is responsible for this family. She's responsible for the growth. She's responsible for them physically. She's responsible for them socially. But most important, it is her, she is, it's very important that she teaches them spiritual matters come first. That's where it is going to start. Terry?
Yeah. And I just wanted to bring out that this is where it says, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if we fear God, we're going to strive to keep his commands. And back over what I said last week in Psalm 19, the commands of the Lord are radiant, the ordinances of the Lord are sure, and you read on down there at the very end, keep your servant. It says here, by them is your servant warned, and keeping them there is great reward. In verse 31, it says here, Proverbs 31:30, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised, give her the reward she has earned. We will earn that in all doing all of this.
Absolutely.
Our reward will be, if we fear the Lord, keep his commands, and in doing this, we have a great reward.
You
it all
are,
just
absolutely.
Ties together.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. Absolutely. And it starts at home. And that's the reason I just stress so much that we need to focus on our families. You know, and, you know, we can get so distracted with so many things in our lives and feel peer pressure. I mean, that was one of the things I struggled with the most when I was raising my kids, was feeling the peer pressure around me that I needed to be out doing this or out doing that. And it was coming from, you know, all different directions. And we just need to stay focused on making sure that the needs of our family are met first, and that we are taking care of all of those needs. And then there are times that you do other things, obviously. But first comes the family. It's so incredibly important. And then I did talk about not becoming a Martha. Because, you know, as the homemaker, it is very easy for us to become a Martha and to feel sorry for ourselves. And, you know, because, you know, all these things have got to be done and I've got to be the one doing it. But that is not what the Lord said. And what he said actually was quite different from that, that hospitality and food are important, but the Lord's word should always come first. Comments? We did it. It's done.
Wonderful class.
You know, the other thing, before the bell rings, you know, so as we've talked about this, and I hope you feel good. I mean, this is something that makes us feel good, that because we're all on this track, and we're all at different stages of this, but we're all on it together, and we are doing a good job at it. I feel very confident about that. What are some of the other women in the Bible that we think about as being noted in the Bible?
Lydia.
Mm-hmm. That's one that came to my mind very quickly.
That
one did too.
Didn't those good women sew for a living?
Yep.
Okay.
I know. It counts me out. I can't even do a hymn, so.
But that's okay. We have other
areas
to do.
Right.
So, and it's funny. You said, doesn't that become a Martha? The first Martha I thought was